Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
First team. And he said he wanted to play for contender. Apparently the workout went well because New Orleans is bringing him in.
If he does well, Nashville could burn.
It might.
Get your couches ready.
Greg Cosell will join us today at 12:15. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to this hour with Doug Matthews. We are on the road presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I know you all are.
Yeah, we are. Excellent.
You're not well rested, we understand.
I'm not. I fell for the old, let's see, all the returns come in, and they at 7 this morning.
You got all the Hawaii returns you checked in.
Do you bounce American around Samoa? A lot of different networks when you're watching?
No. Matter of fact, you all didn't see it. I was in my office in there. You know, I had my own office.
In the green room, yes.
I had my own office. Brad Willis made me a paper at nameplate. Spelled my name wrong, but that's all right.
He loves the tease.
His heart was there. Took a little nap in there, as a matter of fact. Leaned back in a chair.
You're not the only one that took a nap.
I always want to do that, except they'll record me snoring, and then I'll never live it down.
They would do that. Yeah. Now, we've all heard those tapes.
Doug, what did you learn about Tennessee in their game against Charlotte?
Nothing.
Okay.
Offensive line sure has gotten better, huh?
It was, you know, the odd thing about that ball game was that normally in games like that, and listen, I coach in several, you normally don't play well because you play sloppy. You know, you're overthrowing passes, dropping passes, jumping off sides. Tennessee only had 4 penalties, and one of them was a punch penalty, kind of a punch, and didn't have any turnovers. Really didn't drop any passes. They played from that standpoint pretty well, but they just could never get anything going offensively. And you think about it, I mean, that game really was won by a kick return, punt return, where the Charlotte punter just simply made a horrible punt. They had all their coverage, you know, from one hash in, and he punts it and kind of pulls it a little bit, like kind of like some of our golf shots are occasionally. And Callaway did a great job of catching out that rugby punt on the run, and you know, it was just walking in the end zone, really. So, but you think about it, only 7 points on offense, and really didn't come close to scoring again, really.
I was actually there on Saturday, Coach. The sense that I got was that Tyson Helton decided, we're just going to line up and run against Charlotte. We're better, we're more talented, we're more physical. We can run against these guys. And listening to Jeremy Pruitt in his post-game remarks, he said, I don't know why anybody expected we'd run the ball. We hadn't run the ball all year. Can't run the ball on anyone. How is this team going to run the ball on anyone? It sounded to me like a head coach almost calling out his offensive play caller for not doing something.
Did he not see the playing?
Because their quarterback was 14 for 18 for 190 yards. It wasn't like they were having a hard time throwing it. And he wasn't getting hit as much in this game. They were pass protecting okay. It was just an odd game plan, I thought, overall.
Well, his best, if you listen to him, and I do, he'll tell you things. I've mentioned that several times. You listen to his press conference, but coming off the field, I don't know if you probably didn't catch it, you were there, Chad, but coming off the field, he talked to whoever the sideline reporter was, and I forget what the question was, but is basically, he said, listen, we either got to coach him or replace him. And as he was talking about the offensive line, but I think that's probably the thing. I would not have wanted to be in that. I don't know when he has his breakdown meetings with the staff, offense and defense, whether it's Sunday or Monday, but I would not want to have been in that offensive staff room with those coaches, because I think there were a lot of pointed questions asked. And the puzzling thing to me was I couldn't figure out what they were trying to do with Chandler and Jennings. I thought they were holding them out where they were both kind of nicked up the week before, although they were both cleared to play. they didn't play hardly at all. Then they put Chandler in for two plays, two runs, and Jennings in didn't even throw him a pass. So what are you even putting him out there for? You know, to, if he's injured, where he, you know, where they're trying to give him a rest, why put him in a game like that and not utilize him? That those are some of the things that just kind of make you scratch your head, and I think those are a couple of things that the head football coach asked about. You know, what are we doing here? You know,
how young will they be willing to have that offensive line be next year?
Oh, I think it's going to be very young, Paul. If you look at it, I mean, right now, and listen, I know nothing other than just kind of what we all see. I think you'd have to say Trey Smith is maybe 50-50 at best to play. You know, I mean, this is the second time. We all know the seriousness of blood clots. And then you look at, you know, Richmond is going to get beat out. I think Jameer Johnson, who was the junior college kid that came in with 3 years left, I think he, with an off season, he'll get better. Carvin will probably get better. The only one I think is playing even pretty good right now, it's hard to tell how good he's playing, is Ryan Johnson, because the guards are so bad around him. But I think, hey, listen, they've got three offensive linemen coming in, and I think they're probably going to add to that. I think a couple of junior college guys will move over. I mean, not junior college, defensive linemen will move over there. But I think they're going to be as young next year as they are this year, because, listen, they are just not physical enough. And they're going to get more physical in the off season, but I don't think he's going to have any patience for that.
See three freshmen on that line.
Yeah, it's certainly somewhere in the depth. You know, the six or seven or eight players. That's their problem right now. You know, three guys that they counted on playing a good bit. Certainly was Trey Smith. He's out. They thought Chance Hall would be able to play. You know, maybe not start, but play quite a bit. The Carvin kid, he started getting better. He's out. And then Jameer Johnson got hurt, and he's not playing very well. So they got a lot of youth up there. But even with that, there's, you know, nine games in, you can't be making the mistakes that they're making. And one of the biggest ones was where you kind of see some of that is Drew Richmond got called for two penalties for not being on the line of scrimmage. Basic rule on that's pretty simple. This is what those linesmen are. They look right down that line. If you are one of the seven men on the line of scrimmage, tight end, wide receivers, five linemen, and the top of your hat is not breaking the belt of the center, you're going to get flagged. Now, they'll give you a little room every now and then, but that's one of those old deals. You know, it doesn't catch up with you till it catches up with you. They don't call it all day. You got first and goal on the nine, and all of a sudden they throw a 5-yard penalty. So that's just kind of being sloppy and lazy. Get your butt up there. They try to get back to block those rush ins, but you know that's a penalty that they will call occasionally. And we got hit twice with that last week.
I know Calbert played a little bit in this game from Jonathan Hutton's home of Warren County. They got him in at tackle a little bit. I guess the question is, from a coaching standpoint, nine games into the season, I see that as a coaching issue when you've got a veteran tackle that can't get on the line of scrimmage. But if you're telling a kid over and over exactly what to do and he's not doing it, at what point do you roll the dice and put someone out there who maybe is not nearly as talented that's going to line up correctly?
Well, I mean, that's where the coach him.
And they did pull him in that game, too. Well,
that's where the coach him or replace him come from. That's exactly what he was saying right then. And, you know, Calbert has a chance. He's had a knee injury. He's going to get a little bigger, a little bit stronger. But this offensive line is a good bit. It's further away than I thought it would be. I thought it would be better than it is right now. And it's just not a very good offensive line, period. Any way you cut it, you can draw it up about any way you want to cut it.
What do you think defensively for Tennessee? This was a team that wanted to run the ball. They haven't been that good on offense, but holding a team to 3 points and 77 yards in the second half is impressive against anyone.
Well, the good thing that that Tennessee did was they won the kicking game, and they won the field position. 11 of Charlotte's 12 drives started 74 yards or more away from Tennessee's goal line. That's the way you win any ball game, really, but especially a game like that. And they gave up. You know, they didn't give up as many yards as it looked like when you really look at the stats, but they were kind of not letting getting beat deep, and they tackled better and kept them out of the end zone. And, I mean, that was crucial because that game really went down to about the last 7 minutes, really.
We'll take some phone calls for Coach Doug Matthews. We can look back at the Charlotte game. We can look ahead to Tennessee, Kentucky. We'll also get into some other SEC teams as well. Phone lines are open. 615-737-1045. 737-1045.
We are on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive.
More sports talk, less static. Nashville's number one station for sports. 1045. The Zone.
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. We are on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Doug, I asked this knowing that the answer just might be no, but is there anything that Tennessee can learn from what Georgia did to Kentucky?
Yeah, but what happens this when you get this late in the season, in a particularly division play? You really know almost everything about an opponent because you have that with all the analysts you have. Now, one of those analysts, that's his job to compile all one on offense, one on defense, all the opponent, whoever it is, offense and defense. So I think they know exactly what they're going to get. I think it's more really Tennessee after this last ball game figuring out offensively. Defensively, not a problem of knowing what they're going to do because that's pretty they're doing it pretty well right now. They've learned the fundamentals and they're playing so much better there. But offensively, just exactly what they're going to do because there's really nothing that they've been able to do to run the ball. They've tried two tight ends. They've tried a kind of a fullback look. It's not really a fullback look because they got an H-back in there. So that's going to be the interesting thing. And the thing about Kentucky is they're really good on defense. And they get their safeties involved. They're going to – I think what Tennessee's going to see these last three games on defense, they're going to see the South Carolina defense where they play a little loose, don't let you get behind them, keep in front, make you drive the ball, 10, 12 plays, and Tennessee has not shown that they can do that.
Defensively for Tennessee, is this a game against Kentucky where you're okay with the matchup, with what Kentucky wants to do offensively? Is it a good fit for what Tennessee's going to bring to the table?
I do, here's why. Again, going back to your opponent by now, Terry Wilson is a quarterback. The book's on him right now. They know what to do. Don't let him out of the pocket. If he gets out of the pocket, he's going to run. He's not going to throw. He is a very average thrower at best. He hurts people pulling the ball down and running up the middle, if there's a crack. Make him throw the football. He's a very average thrower. So the game plan is, get your game plan that's going to limit Benny Snell. When he's in their wildcat, which truly is a wildcat there, know that he's going to throw it. Stop that. Make him throw the football. Make Wilson stay in the pocket. He's going to throw the ball to you, one out of every five. That's the game plan. Now, to be able to do that, they're going to have to go back to what we talked about a little bit earlier. They're going to can't turn the ball over. Got to make sure they kick the ball down the field and let Kentucky play on offense and Tennessee on defense.
So the best approach is to stack the box and then – dare them to throw it?
And bring the safeties up in, which they can do very easily. Warrior has come up and playing well in that position. That's their defense, number one. I mean, they get safeties involved in it. I don't think you're going to see them pressure much. If they pressure much and bring blitzes from the outside, it's going to be because of the run, not the pass, because, again, they want Wilson to throw the ball from the pocket. That'll be the game plan, I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to get the X's and O's response here because Kentucky was so run-heavy at times against Missouri, Missouri threw a 50 front at them and stuck with it at times throughout that game. Can Tennessee do things in that fashion, or do they have to try something else based on personnel?
What's going to be hard is that means you're going to have to play two outside linebackers, and they really only have one, Darryl Taylor, and they got a couple others that play in there. What's going to be interesting to me is to see what J.J. Peterson does. Because they've moved him to that outside linebacker slot, and he played a little bit last week. I don't think he's probably going to play a whole lot more, but remember, he can play these last four games and still redshirt. I don't think he played enough. They'll try to get that redshirt, I think, for him. And then I think there's a possibility. I think we're going to see this next year, as a matter of fact. I think we're going to see Betuli or Kirkland move to an outside linebacker spot.
Do you like that?
I do. I like Batuli out there a lot. And the reason I say I think they're going to be able to do that is because they got some pretty good depth at linebacker. Ignatz played pretty well. And I think we're going to see Banks over there. I don't think there's not any question that he's going to be over on at the linebacker spot. The only way that he won't move over there is if, and it'll be in spring, or if they're fortunate enough to get to a bowl game at bowl practice. I think Tennessee's going to get a top quality running back. If they get that running back, then I think Banks will definitely move over to defense.
Both Flowers and Abernathy back at practice this week could go on Saturday. If they get both of those guys or one of those guys, how much does that help Tennessee in the back end?
Well, I don't think they're going to get Flowers back. He's probably back, but I don't think he'll play much. They'll probably maybe work him in a little bit. Abernathy certainly would be because he's another guy that can come up and play the run. He's played an awful lot of ball games there. He is not the best of safeties. I think right now that Theo Jackson looked to me like played pretty well last week. I think they've got a little bit more confidence in him. Schamberger. One of the things that happened last week that's a plus, Alante Taylor getting kicked out in the first half was a big plus because he'll be able to start this ball game. And if he got kicked off in the second half, obviously he'd have set out the first half. So it's good that he got it's not good that he got kicked out. But what happened when he did was Tennessee really they were playing five defensive backs, so they actually had their sixth defensive back in there a good bit. And I thought from that standpoint, those guys look like they've learned what to do there. They just got some talent problems in the secondary. They got three or four guys that I think are going to be really good. Flowers is one of them. But they're playing with some guys that are just, probably 4-7 guys, pretty good players. Not going to make any plays for you, but you get them in the right position, they can get guys on the ground, but it's hard to win with guys like that.
Is Alante Taylor the most pleasant surprise on this roster, considering he was a high school quarterback a year ago and he's immediately stepped in and he's one of the better corners in the league when you look at his statistically what he's done?
I think both he and Bryce Thompson. I think Bryce Thompson is too. Alante Taylor, it looks to me like, is faster than Thompson is. But Thompson's got that great quickness. I think both those guys, you get them in a weight room over the spring and summer, you're going to see probably 10, 12 pounds. Both these guys are going to be 6'1"-ish, 6'6", 1-ish, probably going to play 195, 200 physical. They've both shown they'll hit you. I think Theo Jackson's in that group. Flowers is in that group when they get some experience. The whole thing that I see on defense is this, and I'm going to talk about this a good bit probably Sunday. Defensively, this defense as a unit, as a group, they have not learned the nuances of playing the defense that Jeremy Pruitt wants to play. And by that, I mean they're still kind of a little hesitant. When you watch the LSU defense and you watch the Alabama defense in that game, when those guys go, they go. When they see a Hulk crack, they go get it. Batuli showed that on a couple of plays last week, where a little gap opened up and he shot through that thing. I call it the old Pac-Man game, where the Pac-Man goes and gets the ghost or whatever heck he's trying to get. But you got to go get them. You got to eat them up. You can't sit and wait or be a little bit hesitant, because if you're 6 inches slow, then you're going to be arm tackling. If you're arm tackling in this league, you're not going to tackle many people.
You're a fan of history, Coach, and history in college football. It's been 34 years since Kentucky won in Neyland Stadium. Does that mean anything in this game with a team that beat Tennessee a year ago? Is there any type of mystique out there about them playing in Neyland Stadium in this game?
No. My experience has been this. Anytime you talk about history past what any player on that team has played in, it doesn't mean anything to those guys. I mean, by the way, I was coaching in that game. I remember very well we fumbled on the 1 yard line going in to lose that ball game up in Knoxville going into the
How was that coach's meeting afterward?
Well, it was a lot of fun. But you figure you're going to lose one every 30 years or so to somebody. I mean, good gosh, that's a pretty good run there. I don't think Fulmer ever lost to him, did he? I don't think he did.
Nope.
But. But no, it really doesn't. Every time I hear that, there's two things that kind of make me chuckle. That, and then when you hear these games, like you lose the Super Bowl, the next year you play the team again and you get your revenge in the second game. No, you don't get revenge for a Super Bowl loss.
No, unless you play the same exact team the next Super Bowl.
That's exactly right. So,
Doug, we know what the win against Auburn meant for morale at the time. They played well against South Carolina, didn't win that game, but on the road against South Carolina, saw some nice things. And then this was a team that was just simply going through the motions against, as Chad pointed out, against Charlotte. What would a win against Kentucky do for the morale of this program and for its fan base?
Well, let's just take the last three ball games. They're sitting there with four wins. They got three teams that are beatable. You know, they got, and really all three of them are home games, really. I mean, when they come to Nashville, there we know will be many more Tennessee fans here than Vanderbilt fans. But they're all losable too. None of these teams are going to, you know, are earth shattering, but they all three can beat you. So they need to win two of them, simply because I think if they get to six wins, I got no problem with them getting to five wins. I mean, this year is what it is. But that sixth win gets you practicing for a bowl game. And there's two things that happen when you practice for a bowl game. One, you get better because you work with those young players over and over and over. And the second thing is when you're bringing players in for official visits, the ones that haven't signed, you got something to show them instead of just a campus with nobody on it.
They can see how you work.
Yeah. And you can, they can go in, if it's a defensive back, they can go in the defensive back room, they can meet the defense, you know, they get to know people, and they get to be around the players some, and the players got a lot of time because they're not in school. So those are the two big pluses for that. But overall, here's what I know. I know that the athletic director and the head coach are 100% on the same page. Philip knows, he's watched enough to know what this team makeup is. He knows where this team needs to improve. And he's going to give Jeremy Pruitt 100% of what he needs to do it. And I know this because I talked to him this week about it. He is 100% sold. This guy is the right guy for this job. And that's good enough for me.
1045thezone.com. Your home for the zone online. Online. Read the Big Six blog. Register for contests. Find out when we'll be in your area. And catch up anything you might have missed with the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical podcast. Find out how to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Download our mobile app and listen online. You'll find everything you need to keep up with the zone. All in one place. At 1045thezone.com.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. All right, Doug. Doug Matthews with us, by the way, presented by the
Doug
Tennessee
Matthews,
Highway.
Man.
Doug Matthews, man. He was presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
My man needs some help out there, don't he?
What is
going on?
I don't know. You know, Reggie Court McKenzie.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Reggie, outstanding player at Tennessee. Played, Austin East, I think, he and his brother. But GM out there. And I imagine it's a little difficult right now. I think John was at Tennessee. I think he was there 1 year when Reggie was playing. Maybe wrong. John came in maybe 86 or 7, something like that, for a couple of years. But
it seems that John's not making Reggie's job any easier.
Well, I don't know whose job is. I'm not sure. If you're paying a guy $100 million 10 years, he's probably got quite a bit to say, I would think, on who's coming in. But
true.
We'll see.
Doug, why not Juwan Jennings at quarterback some for Tennessee? If nothing else, on Saturday, it freaks Kentucky out. And they end up, you know, best case for them, they call timeout and regroup. If it doesn't work, is it really any different than just running into the teeth of the defense anyway? So
what are you going to ask him to do? That would be the question.
Run.
More of a wildcat type
situation.
Well,
I think if they're going to do that, they'd probably do it with, they've done it some with Jordan. I think Jordan now is kind of their, you know, Jordan's just a pretty good back, really. I think if they're going to do that, they're going to do it with Chandler. Now, I could see him doing some things like the last staff did with Juwan from throwing the football. You know, he's thrown in his 2 years there. He threw a touchdown pass to Dobbs down in Florida a couple of years ago, and then a 2-point play last year, or 2 years ago, at Texas A&M. He's got the ability to do that. I'm sure that is somewhere in one of those packages, but we haven't seen it yet. We only got 3 games left.
See, I think this is the week to do it.
Well, and this, and I'll ask it from this perspective, just creativity with the run game. They clearly can't just hand off and go off guard and get the necessary yardage. I think Juwan Jennings is the toughest runner on the team in terms of getting an extra yard or two after contact. If it's 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2, why not go with what Kentucky does with Benny Snell? Well, he's going to take a lot of snaps on Saturday, and they'll run straight from there. At least try something different, I guess, would be my stance in the run game. Either that or don't try it at all.
I wouldn't hold my breath. Talking about that, how about Cordarrelle Patterson?
Oh, I was just going to ask.
My gosh, where did that come from? That guy looked like Travis Henry.
Remember when he would play running back sparingly at Tennessee under Jim Chaney, and they would give him a pitch. And I feel like he averaged 15 yards a carry when he would play running back at Tennessee. Yet another underutilized Tennessee running back, Alvin Kamara and Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, the two of them.
And their time in Tennessee.
Their chances. It's an interesting wrinkle.
Doug, does Tennessee – where would you put the percentage chance that Tennessee enters – November with right now at the final stretch at making a bowl game? Is it less than 50%? Is it what's your confidence level?
I would say it's less than 50%. They're gonna have to win 2 ball games. You know, when you look, Missouri's playing pretty darn well right now. You know, Kentucky is playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky's got a chance 10-win season, a very realistic chance at a 10-win season with the way Louisville's playing now. So I think they're going to see three motivated teams. You would think Tennessee would be, but, you know, it's really kind of hard to judge where this team is right now because it's I think they all know that the head coach has said, I'm going to go out and find guys that are better than you are to come in and play. But having said that, I think they're playing hard and doing all that. But no, I would like to think that they would win 2 of the 3, maybe 3 of the 3. But it's going to be difficult. I mean, particularly if you look at take Auburn away, good effort against South Carolina. You know, it's hard to see this team offensively scoring many points. Now, Missouri is going to score some points, and Vanderbilt, if they get hot, and some scores and boards. Kentucky probably not going to score a whole lot of points if you don't help them, simply because they don't have the quarterback that those other two guys do. But hey, if Shermer and Locke get you know, if they're on and throwing, and the receivers that really both of them have, they're going to give Tennessee some problems, no doubt about that. Tennessee's going to have to find some way offensively to score some points. They can't be in the 14-21 point level and win all 3 of these by any means.
Do you think Jeremy Pruitt, as we're now into November, do you think that he overrated the talent at Tennessee when he got there? Do you think this is about what he expected with this roster? Is there a surprise factor when you get into the season and see that you're not working with what you had at Alabama?
I can't tell you exactly what he's told me a couple of times, and this is before the season, preseason, but he knew the problem with this team is in 2 lines of scrimmage. They are not anywhere near what he knew Southeastern Conference teams needed to be. Remember, he had coached at Georgia, and he had coached at Alabama, and
at Florida State, who had a pretty good defensive line.
But he knew the talent. He knew what LSU had, and Auburn had, and Alabama had, and Georgia had, and Florida had. Even Florida wasn't very good on offense, but pretty good on defense. So, no, I think he knew exactly what that was, and he has got this team. The encouraging thing I see is, especially on the defensive side of the ball, he has this team playing fundamentally really good defense. He just doesn't have the guys that can make the plays. That's what I was talking about, the little nuances. Let me give you a simple thing. It's football, defensive football 1-on-1. If you're whoever's playing the flat coverage in the zone, could be a cornerback, could be a linebacker, could be a safety out there. If there's a man in front of you, they run a guy in front of you, you just know there's somebody behind you, right? And they want you to bite up on that 5-yard route so they can throw the 15 route in behind. Well, guys that know that, they're going to play back and then come up and get a good break and get the guy on the ground. Or they'll kind of bait it a little bit, and when you throw it back there, they'll go back there and intercept it. Those are the little nuances you get from that. But you have to, you know, you just have to know that. You know, you just have to know that, hey, I got, you know, I got inside coverage. When I got this coverage, these are the things that can't happen. I can allow something to happen, you know, if I'm playing inside, I'm not going to give them an inside route. And if they throw an outside route, they may complete it. But those are the little nuances that they're missing. They're missing it up front too. You know, knowing when to come off that twist stunt and really tight and get in there and beat that guard there before he can get there. It's just those little things. That's what I was mentioning. It's not like they're thinking, but they just don't have the feel for that yet. But I see them getting better at it.
And you mentioned earlier, Daniel Batuli had a few plays where he hit the gap properly and hit it hard. After the Alabama game, Jeremy Pruitt said, "We tiptoe on blitzes. I'll call a blitz and a corner will tiptoe." He's like, "Did you see any of their guys tiptoeing through a blitz or through the quarterback? They run through people." So you can see that at times on blitzes that are called as well.
And I'd never heard that. I never heard it called tippy toeing.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what it is. You just kind of tippy toe in there, you know, instead of coming. And I'm going to get in there. And, you know, and that's right. When those good blitzers, and we're talking about safeties, nickels, safeties, and outside linebackers, when they come through and get a shot on that quarterback's going to be ending up with his head hitting the ground because they're going to run right through him. And that's what he's talking about. Again, just a little field. You're maybe a little cautious about it. I don't want to miss the tackle, or, you know, I want to make sure I do this instead of going out there and playing.